This is Casey Dobson, and you're listening to the CJRU 1280 AM here in Toronto. This is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. Over the last few years, there's been a reckoning in the sports world when it comes to the attention paid to women's sports by the media, especially in North America. This movement was spearheaded by the United States women's national soccer team, who won the 2019 Women's World Cup amidst their lawsuit over their federation regarding equal pay. So the momentum garnered by this movement for women's sports seemed to make an impactful change when, on the eve of International Women's Day in 2020, CBC Sports announced that they would be committing to gender-balanced sports coverage across all of their platforms. As much as this move seems, in our current culture, to be a no-brainer, it sticks out in stark contrast to the media's past when it comes to showcasing women. A 2016 study conducted by the Canadian Women in Sport Foundation uncovered that national sports networks dedicated a microscopic 4% of their 35,000 hours of coverage to women's sports. The same study found that these networks committed 11% of their coverage to sports showcasing both genders. All of these are tiny numbers in an Olympic year, meaning that there was a plethora of high-quality women's sport action to choose from. All of this was pre-COVID. Once the pandemic hit, we saw a heavy uptick in the casual fans' appetite for women's sports as the televised sports landscape became as dry as a desert. This isn't just conjecture. The numbers back it up. The WNBA saw a 15% increase in viewership over the course of their three-game championship series in 2020. And that's nothing compared to the 493% jump seen by the NWSL for their final game. Certainly, these numbers were due in part to this being the first year that these games were accessible with a regular cable TV package, but it proves that the tides were turning. Over the same time frame, Sport Media Watch found that all other team sports saw a drop-off in viewership. So, for all intents and purposes, the NWHL bubble was entering the market at the perfect time, with the appetite for women's sports being at an all-time high. And things were looking extremely promising even before puck drop, when the league secured a deal with NBC Sports to broadcast the semifinal and final games to a national audience. This deal was historic as it marked the first time that the U.S. network would air live women's pro hockey. While this didn't happen when planned with the bubble suspension, the network has confirmed that the games will still be televised on their rescheduled dates. I spoke with Leanne Strollo, a journalist who covers the NWHL for the Ice Garden and co-founder of Not Your Papa's Hockey, a platform dedicated to hot takes and non-traditional markets, to get her thoughts on the NBCSN deal.
Incredibly excited. Like, even though I wasn't technically involved in it, I was like feeling like my work had paid off and the work of, you know, so many people that do so much for this league and the players too, especially. And also at the same time, a little bit of nerves because it was like, this is the one chance to really, you know, they're kind of extending a hand here, and it sucks because NBC should be doing this anyway and a lot of the major media companies should be putting women on TV. Like, what a concept. But they finally were, you know, extending the hand and doing it, and it was like, oh my gosh, everything has to be perfect. And then clearly wasn't. But yeah, excitement but nerves, and I think a lot of people would say that was the vibe.
Everything seemed to be falling into place on the media side. Networks were talking about the tournament, Canadian outlets were dedicating articles and coverage to our new team, and the public sentiment was one of excitement and anticipation. But there was one particular media outlet that had yet to make their presence felt. Enter Barstool Sports. If you've never heard of them as a network, chances are you've heard of one of their brands, whether that's Spit and Chicklets or Call Her Daddy. But once you dig just a little bit deeper into who they are and what they were built on, you'll discover the backdrop for the backlash they received when they inserted themselves into the NWHL bubble. So, who are they? Lisa Nakamura, a professor at the University of Michigan who studies the intersection of digital media, race, gender, and sexuality, describes Barstool Sports as a nostalgic callback to the idea that the more offensive you are, the more free you're being, calling their content a cultural preservation project for bros. Currently, Barstool's main Instagram page has 9.8 million followers. And while this growth has been relatively steady as of late, Social Blade Analytics shows that during the Me Too movement, the page nearly doubled in followers. And given that the rhetoric in the comment section of their post announcing Antonio Brown's rape allegations was littered with victim blaming, it's not hard to see why. In an email to NBC News, their founder, Dave Portnoy, stated that his company will not, quote, bow to the winds of PC culture, whichever way they may blow. He went on to explain that he believes his site represents the silent majority, a remark serving to prove one expert's opinion that the site casts the young white man as the persecuted one of our mainstream political correctness, with Barstool serving as their safe space. So that's who Barstool is, but why are they relevant to the story? This part starts with Barstool CEO, Erica Nardini, and her podcast, Token CEO. Token CEO is, obviously, a Barstool property, and thus is inextricably linked to the values and history associated with the company. Because of this, when two NWHL players appeared on the podcasts, fans and other players alike responded with predictable disappointment and anger. Metropolitan Riveters players Kelly Babstock and Rebecca Russo were guests on the January 21st episode of Token CEO, called Smile Through the Suck, to preview the NWHL bubble. The response clearly wasn't what Nardini was expecting, and she then released a video in which she acted confused as to why her efforts to grow the game of women's hockey was a bad thing. Somewhat predictably, this didn't go over well with the members of the women's hockey community on Twitter. I asked Strollo why she thought the backlash to the podcast episode was as negative as it was.
I think it's one of the most unique things with women's sports comparatively to the rest of the sports world and to men's sports. You know, NHL players have done this too, where they've gone on, you know, Spit and Chicklets, and people are like, oh, it's disappointing, but what do you expect? You know, I think when it comes to women's sports, they're so far ahead progressively that, you know, I mean, even the NWHL itself, but more so you see in the NWSL and the WNBA, like, these are such outspoken women for equality on all accounts that, you know, you don't see a lot of these women going on Barstool podcasts or aligning themselves with them or anything like that, because of the fact that they have such a racist, sexist, homophobic history just across the board. Like, I don't need to explain that. Anybody listening probably knows that. So it's just disappointing to see women do that, especially when the, you know, the league, a lot of these players have carved out a safe space for people. This is a place that women come to watch games because it's free of the misogyny of the NHL for the most part. You know, LGBTQ fans can come here because look at all these, you know, out proud gay women in this league, or we trans players that we've had in the NWHL. You know, this is supposed to be a safe space. So bringing Barstool, you know, to a partnership level, even on a player-by-player basis, is just disappointing. And a lot of fans just said, I don't want this here. Like, I mean, it's fine, you want to be friends with who you want to be friends with, that's fine, but like, I just don't want them in my space. And the idea that, oh, but we can bring so many fans, it's like, these are not the fans that I want here, is the mantra of a lot of fans, because, you know, I'd rather be smaller, but know that I'm safe at games, know that I'm respected at games, know that the people around me aren't the toxic fan base that you bring.
Riveters rookie Soraya Tinker, one of five Black women playing in the NWHL, released a statement on Twitter. Tinker's statement was shortly followed by one from the league itself, in which they explicitly stated that they will not do business with anyone who doesn't align with their values. Nardini came out with another video and a podcast episode that featured a montage of screenshots of tweets criticizing the Barstool CEO, or the company as a whole, accompanied by a voiceover of her explaining she was just calling out the people who don't like Barstool. Strollo was one of the journalists whose tweet was featured in Nardini's montage, and here's how she felt about being included.
First of all, the first one I was very perplexed at, just because I don't even think a lot of the stuff that she put in this video was like that offensive. I'm like, people say so much worse about your company on the regular that, like, if you really, really wanted to like make this like my haters video, you could have done so much more. Like, I know one of the ones that was in there was just like, players are gonna associate with who they want to associate with, like, so if they want to associate with Barstool, they're going to. I'm like, that isn't even like saying anything about your company. It's just telling like a fact. I don't know. But I mean, it doesn't, you know, I know people that got way worse backlash on Twitter, and I know it's much, much harder for not straight white people to get stuff from them and get hate. So I just, you know, I muted, or I like went private for like 2 days maybe, and I was like, okay, I'm good. Like, say what you're gonna say, whatever.
NWHL Commissioner Tominia then criticized Nardini for publicizing the names of journalists and league staff who objected to the podcast, rightfully pointing out that this was an invitation for Nardini and Barstool's millions of fans to go and harass these individuals who had given so much to women's hockey. I asked Strollo about how she felt with regards to the league's statement.
And I think the statement is less than what a lot of people would have wanted to, because it wasn't an outright, we will not partner with Barstool. I think, once again, that's an ideal situation. But I think it's, from my perspective, as good as you're going to get. You're going to get her saying, we don't want to partner with people that we don't align with their values. If you want to interpret that as we don't align with Barstool's values, please do. Wink, wink, you know? It's tough, because you really want everybody to come out and just be on your side and agree with you and not want to have these people involved. But unfortunately, some of them do. So on a player level, so you can't make that stance. And that is really shows beyond just this league, but how far behind hockey is from a lot of other sports. Obviously, it's a very predominantly white sport, whether you're talking about men or women.
The grand finale came when Dave Portnoy involved himself via an emergency press conference hosted on Instagram Live. There was a lot said that didn't surprise anyone, but the one thing that did stick out was his suggestion that Tinker should be jailed for her comments regarding his company. While it would be easy to dismiss all of this as petty drama, the fact of the matter is that this incident is emblematic of a larger issue at play. Much of the discourse that has accompanied this ordeal has been that women's sports cannot afford to be choosy over their fans, and they should just be happy with any attention that they're getting. This frame of argument disregards the problems at the core of Barstool's involvement in any women's league. Regardless of opinion, it is impossible to ignore that Portnoy has perpetuated disparities in nearly every sociological category, one thinly veiled joke at a time. Under the guise of authenticity, him and his company are now trying to demand respect from the people to whom they have never shown it. But back to the question of, can women's leagues afford to choose their fans? In the case of the NWHL, when it comes to Barstool, it doesn't take much deeper thought than contrasting the kinds of people Barstool attracts with the progressivism demonstrated by the NWHL. From being the first league to embrace a transgender athlete in Harrison Brown, to the end racism messaging seen on jerseys and the boards, the values, as touched on by Tominia in her statement, regarding financial interest from Barstool, could not be further apart. Speaking of the statement, the fact that they said anything proved that they as a league were not scared to alienate a certain type of fan, which, according to David Barry, a Southern Utah University economics professor, is the best course of action. Barry says that women's leagues are wise to be seeking out different types of fans altogether and to target a new kind of audience than the long-standing male leagues. His reasoning is that to be a fan, one would need to be emotionally invested in the team itself, and a man who doesn't like women's sports in general isn't going to make that type of investment. It just so happens that this kind of man has appeared to congregate in the Barstool Sports comment section. The hard truth is that there is no nice way to end this story, because Estrella tells me the story isn't over.
The Riveters are unfortunately a unique situation where it was the kind of two most polarizing figures of this whole debate just so happened to be on the same team. And from all that we can tell from social media and everything, that they were good friends too. Everybody, you know, everything about this team on social media was that they were so connected and such good friends and had such a great, you know, partnership with each other. So I don't know who is leaving that at the door. You know, is Soraya Tinker walking into a room and saying, I have to check myself because I'm in a room of people who agree with this, or is it the other way around? Or is that not happening? Is it happening? I don't know, you know? So I think a lot of fans haven't forgotten that though, and are still looking at these social media posts and trying to piece together and find answers. And I think it's fair to want answers, because it's like, do I want to root for a team? Do I want to buy your jersey? Do I want to like you as a player if I know that you align with these things? You know, it's fair for a fan to ask those questions. So I think fans will keep it alive.
This is Casey Dobson, and you've been listening to CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll dive in to what comes next for women's hockey. Thanks for listening.